Project Independence is the Aging in Place initiative of the Town of North Hempstead. One of the many services we offer is help at home with minor home maintenance. Call 311 or 869-6311 to get more information or receive services.
Welcome back to Senior Talk Radio here on 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. This is Project Independence in You. I'm your host, John Ryan, and my co-host today is Otto Loos.
Great topic, John. Great topic.
It really is. And you know, the one thing that I like about this is it's love. At the end of the day, hospice is love. You know, people look at it like, oh, they're dying and stick them in the corner. That's not it. The definition of hospice is love. It's caring. And the reason I have both Jessica and Kelly on today is we have a family in the Tully family that has given millions of dollars worth of support to Jessica and the hospice organization so that they can provide the love to families all over Long Island. And that is, I mean, that's the end of it. That's really what it is. But just when we went into the break, Otto and Jessica were talking in reference to the time allotted at home, and just go further into that, because you got 4 hours if you're at home, but of course, if you're in the hospice environment, you're there 24/7. So anytime I want something, I can just yell for it.
Yes. Yes. Theoretically. So I think, you know, I just want to clarify that, you know, hospice, the whole program is meant to be medical support. It's not, the intention isn't really what we call custodial care. So the physical care of someone, you know, typically falls to the people that they live with, the people that take care of them, as they were doing before they were coming on hospice. So what we do is we try to add to that to make that a little bit easier for the family, to relieve the caregiver a little bit. But the program isn't set up to completely support all the physical needs of someone 24/7. What we are meant to do is to take care of the medical needs, to provide, you know, that emotional support, that confidence, that training, that education to the caregivers at home, so they can then provide the care or identify who they want to provide the care. So what we will do is partner with, usually it's family members, it might be a private aide that they've had for many years, it might be a neighbor, but partner with whoever they identify, the patient identifies to be their trusted caregiver, to make it work for them in the setting that they wish to be in. So we provide all different kinds of services, like I mentioned, the medical coverage. A nurse comes as needed at least once a week, but more if needed, to, you know, make sure that patient has all the medications they need, they have all the supplies, do any wound care if needed, educate on symptoms, tell people what to anticipate, what might be coming up, talk to the patient about their questions, about their own, you know, health needs. We also offer the social worker and the chaplain, like I mentioned, to deal, you know, talk with them about emotional support needs, existential questions, spirituality. The social workers get very involved in the questions you were asking, Otto, about, you know, how much aid service do you need? Do you need any more coverage? What other resources do you have? Can we talk about Medicaid? Can we talk about long-term health insurance? You know, is there, you know, and also having difficult conversations with families. Maybe there's a large family and all the care is falling to one person. The social worker will try and help, you know, everyone have that conversation about what's needed right now. Also, we offer volunteer support, which is how Kelly's mom got involved with hospice. And that's an amazing resource that we have, especially for those patients who are home most of the time by themselves, able to talk, able to converse, and really want quality of life. Our volunteers are amazing at giving them some extra quality, going, learning about them, looking at their pictures, sometimes watching movies, you know, teaching each other skills, playing cards, those kinds of things that, you know, maybe sometimes their caregivers don't have time to spend time with them like that. And our volunteer, you know, volunteers are amazing at doing that. So we have a lot of resources to make people kind of feel the love 24/7, even if there's not necessarily a, you know, a home health aide there 24/7.
Does it happen that it, like we talk about an inn and we talk about home, does it happen that you wind up with hospice care while in a hospital? Is that?
You can, it depends on kind of the locations, but yeah, we, in a couple of the hospitals in the area, we have contracts or units on the, in the hospital, where we can provide hospice care in a unit in a hospital if that's needed. And that would be similar coverage to the inn, like we were talking about.
Right.
Jessica, do you have, which I haven't said so far this morning, a phone number to give out? I mean, we were just talking about volunteers. So if somebody does want, not now, I know it's very difficult. So I'm sure you're not getting phone calls for somebody who wants to come and volunteer. But a number they can put in their Rolodex to call, because I see there's even a student program.
Yeah, so the number is 516-832-7100. That's the main number for Hospice Care Network. So you can get to all of our sites within that one number. So that'd be the number for the Mary Ann Tully Hospice Inn. We use a lot of volunteers there as well. And, you know, Nassau, Suffolk, Queens, that's what we cover. So yeah, we're always looking for volunteers. And also if there's anyone that just wants a little more information about hospice, if they think, you know, I'm okay, I had this diagnosis, but I'm okay right now, you know, but how would it help me? How would it benefit me? You can always call our referral department and see if it would benefit in any way.
Right. Another thing, I assume just by calling that 832-7100 number, mm-hmm. I have a copy that Christina got me of a brochure mm-hmm. that I'm sure people could just call for that brochure. It's a tremendous brochure covering all the various stuff that goes on in hospice. And one that I want to touch on actually now is pastoral care, which is important because, I mean, even just recently now in New York, we wound up with the governor and the church fighting about freedom of religion, et cetera. But it's important that people have to feel that just because they're going into a hospice environment doesn't mean they're giving up anything from a personal perspective, from a religious perspective, from a dietary perspective, no matter what it is, everything is being done to accommodate them. Mm-hmm. Am I right there?
Yes, absolutely. So yeah, the pastoral care, I referenced them as chaplains earlier, so sorry for the terminology switch. Yeah, but pastoral care is a core discipline of hospice. And, you know, every patient that comes on our program is assigned to a pastoral care counselor. And has access to that. It's their choice whether they accept that or not. But I think they definitely round out the support and help immensely, making patients feel, you know, comfortable and heard and witnessed at the end of their life. You know, a lot of times questions like why me come up, and or why him, right? It might not be the patient asking themselves. We see sometimes the patients are the most comfortable with their own death. It's sometimes the family members, maybe the spouse that's been married for 70 years and now her husband's dying. And she's saying, why him? Why can't it be someone else? Why him? And we can talk about that emotionally, but sometimes it really is a spiritual question that you know, kind of existential aspect of death really can be processed very well with the pastoral care counselor.
Right. Now that part of it's important. Journaling, different things like that, that people, you know, at a certain point in their life should focus on to get in touch with. It's very stoic in nature, but, you know, life does end. I mean, nobody's here forever, and we all have to put that in perspective. Actually, I want to go back to Kelly. I know the golf tournament. I'm getting ready for Christmas. The golf tournament is your big thing. How did it come about? I mean, that's just because a golf tournament, or your family are major golfers, or?
Yeah, we're a big family of golfers. You know, always have been. My parents both were big golfers, and my mother started it at her golf club.
And then your mother started it. I had no idea. Oh, okay.
Yeah, my mother started the outing itself. I can remember it. You know, I was young, and I can remember it. And it just developed over time. And then it became like a sought after thing after a while. Everyone wanted to play, you know, in the golf outing. And it became, you know, a lot of the people that have supported us are the people that support, you know, my brother's businesses as well. So that's
right. Well, that usually, you know, when you to have a successful golf outing, you know, you have to have an honoree. And you have to have the people doing it have connections. I mean, it really works. There's no question about it. Yeah. So that I, in order to do business with your family, say, guess what, how am I going to do it? Let me take care of the hospice. And then hopefully you'll turn around and say, well, everything is equal. He's a good guy. And at the same time, he helps the family hospice.
Yes. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's just, like I said, it's progressed over the years. You know, it was got really big for a while, and then we kind of wanted it to be, you know, a little bit more sought after so that we could raise more money, you know, by increasing the foursomes and that kind of thing. And, you know, we've done really well over the years with our 100 and I think we're up to 110 golfers. And wow. It's been very successful and very sought after golf outing every year.
Next year, I'm going to be involved in the golf outing. I'm going to be a driver for a cart, though. I don't play golf. I want to drive one of the carts. And actually, since we are talking golf, and I'm sure Keegan's in school today, Kelly's youngest son, Keegan, is like the champion golfer in their golf club. And he's 16 or 17?
16
years old. And I saw his picture during the summer at some point.
Yeah.
And it was ridiculous number, like 60 something or 70 something.
I think
whatever the good golf number.
72 that day or something.
Yeah, but nevertheless, he was the number one golfer in their club, and also in his school. Doesn't he play with the school?
He does play for the school, but last year they didn't play because of the pandemic, so we don't really know where he stands at school.
That's true too. But but at the same time,
I'm not a champion golfer, but I played yesterday after the frost delay.
Did you really?
Oh yeah, we play all year round. No snow on the ground, and we play.
That's and Anna's also.
We actually have used a hammer and a nail to get the tee in the ground.
Wow.
Yeah. We have a name for our group, which I won't use on this show.
Tell us at the next break.
The initials.
What is it?
COB. Crazy okay. Old.
Guess what? So long as you're out there having fun, that's the other side of it. I mean, before anybody winds up,
time. I lost a dollar too.
John, I do want to say one thing. When my mother put herself on hospice before her passing, she put herself on hospice in July and she passed in September. You know, she knew what she was getting into because she had been so involved with every aspect of hospice. But the people.
And your mother was a nurse too, right?
My mother was a nurse, yep.
Yeah.
That was, you know, by trade, she was a nurse before.
And she was a model. I've seen pictures of Kelly's mom going back. She was on magazine covers. She's gorgeous. But
she
anyway.
She was on the cover of Look magazine. But so I just want to say that the people that come in from hospice are amazing. I can't say enough about them. She had this aide that would come in and sing to her and just be, I mean, such a presence in. They would come for, you know, a couple of hours, like Jessica said, and it was just absolutely incredible and amazing. And the people that do this work is, how hard is it to be with somebody who, you know, they're dying and you don't know when they're going to die, but you come in every day with a smile on your face and they're just as happy to see you as you are them. You know, it's very.
And it's, you know what? You don't have to know them, but it's true love as far as I'm concerned. But unfortunately, we have to go into another break. You're listening to Senior Talk Radio here on 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. We'll be right back.